We're in the Siva Shalom. Kinyan Ma'ariz HaMachpeah L'Achuzas Kavra on page 134, Kuf Lamed Dalet. We know at the beginning this week's parasha is called what? Chaye Sara. Why Chaye Sara? She died. The first pasuk, she died.
Her legacy lives on.
Her legacy lives on. Beautiful, that's one answer. We are definitely, and I'll bring you a proof, there are a lot of Sarahs walking around. There are a lot of Sarahs. And a lot of people who want to live, who want to emulate Sarah and the Rova Yehudi. What do we have? We have people who have every meal 25, 30, 35 guests every meal. Why? Because of Sarah. V'parashas Kvura Sarah b'maharas ha-machpela v'kinyanam yad Ephron. In the parasha, in the portion of... You have a book, Noam?
Not today.
You know it by heart. Noam's already well beyond what we're up to. Anu motzim sha'atorah kedosha shosiyoseh asfuros v'chol teba b'kedosha. We know that Moshe Rabbeinu had no extra ink. He was just trying to waste ink. So he wrote this word, he wrote that word, he wrote this story, that story. Every single word in the Torah is measured. So therefore, how much is there to say about Shabbos?
Not so much.
I'll tell you how much there is. There's over 150 pages of Maseches Shabbos. And tens and hundreds and thousands and millions of pages of commentary on Maseches Shabbos.
I thought you were asking about the Torah. So.
Yeah, if you go to the Hebrew University Library and you type in
Shabbos.
On their computer Shabbos, you will see how many books you come out with on the laws of Shabbos that discuss Shabbos. Here we have a computer. We have 19,000, some a few hundred, 400 books approximately on our computer program over here.
Wow.
Type in the word. You do a search Shabbos, and you'll see results. You will have probably, just in those 19,000 books, probably hundreds of thousands of results. Right? And what does the Torah tell us about Shabbos?
Not so much.
Keep it.
Almost nothing. It just says keep it, without going into it. Yom Kippur, how much is there to say about Yom Kippur? You know how many books have been written on Yom Kippur? Do you know you can write a whole book? Just a whole book, just on one aspect of Yom Kippur.
Torah Baal Peh, that's right.
And the Torah Shabbat Peh, exactly, they leave it up to the oral law. Wow! A new superstar! Up for the minors! Actually, it's not nice to call you Yeshiva the minors. A traded from a different team! Wow, he comes out here right away, and he hits a game-winning double. So that's it, it's only oral law. But in the written law, every word is measured. They don't go into things, that's why you need the Gemara. And yet, when it comes to this parasha, which is just not telling us how to live, what is Torah? Torah is Chaim. It's a Torah. It's supposed to teach us how to live our lives. And here you just have a nice story of an old man, Nebuch. His wife died. He buys her a burial plot. It should say at best, Sarah died, and Avram bought her a burial plot. What does the Torah do? It goes deep into the negotiations. He said this to them. They said that to him. He said this to them. They bowed. He bowed. They danced the kazatska, and he brought the burial plot. The dancing isn't true. He was in mourning. But I'm saying, what is the Torah going through all this big long story for?
It teaches you how to deal with the billion.
Maybe it teaches you how to handle, how to bargain.
Yeah.
A Jew needs to know how to bargain. But I'll be honest with you,
Avram,
he could have gotten it for free maybe, and he ended up sending. According to the art scroll I once saw on the, they made a cheshbon based on a Tosfos. That today it would be, if not hundreds of millions, if not billions. Avraham Avinu was a very, very rich man. So in today's money, it would be millions upon millions of dollars that he paid for that little burial plot.
Are you
serious? I'm very serious. That's how they figured out how much Arba Meil Shekel Kesef is in those times, how much it would be worth today. And it comes out that back then it was a matter of millions of dollars. And originally Ephron said to him, right? Yeah, Ben Arba Meil Shekel Ben Chavav Ben Yehu Ben Chamai. So he could have gotten a much better deal. And he insisted on spending a large sum of money. So anybody whose family is in business, and I know my family is in, for many generations, has been a big family of businessmen. So our goal is always to try to get the most we can get for the least amount of money. And here everyone was getting seemingly the very minimal amount for the most amount of money. So let's understand what's still. So it's not to teach us how to bargain. Because to offer them a tremendous sum of money when they didn't even demand it is not the way we do things. So the first thing that Nesiv Shalom says is, very simply, there's two types of chesed. There's chesed im achai, and there's chesed im ames. You can do chesed with somebody who's alive, but what would happen if you do chesed with somebody who's alive? They'll pay you back. I'll tell you a quick marriage tip. I always like giving marriage tips. Because I have no interest. I told you my family's in business, not in divorce law. If I was in divorce law, I wouldn't give you marriage tips. Maybe it would be, maybe I wouldn't. I would anyway. But in theory, it would be parnassah for my family. But there's no parnassah for me when people get divorced. So therefore, I want people to remain happily married. So I'll tell you right now. You do one favor for your wife. The nature of a Jewish woman is, you do one favor for her, she'll want to do 10 back to you. Oh, thank you so much. And then you do two favors for her, and she'll want to do 30 back for you. And it just becomes, what do you call that in math? When it's
exponential
growth, exactly. So we're, mostly men, are quite often self-centered, spoiled young men, because our whole life we've just been treated, we've been served on hand and foot. We've had our mother, we've had our maid, we've had maybe older sisters. A lot of us grew up in homes, we're all taken care of. In yeshiva, we have the kitchen staff serving us, we're always being taken care of. And a girl is brought up, she's brought up in a nice Jewish home. And what does she do? Her job is to serve. You've seen a lot of homes, you know, the girls already know at a very young age. They babysit for the kids, they take care of the kids, they know how to change diapers, they know how to clean, they know how to wash dishes, they take off the table. So I'm really trying to break that stereotype. And in my home, I often make announcements that say as follows. In this house, not only the girls work, the boys also have to work. But then I realize that I'm also included in the boys category. So I quickly correct myself, and I say all boys under 30. No, all the boys have to work, and we should stop being spoiled brats. Your mother and your sister aren't here to be your slaves. But fortunately, depending on how you look at it, women are brought up that's their job. Their job is to work and to take care of the home, and they do it all free of charge. So they don't really expect, many of them, and they don't see it in their homes, that the man does all that much. So the more you do for her, the kinder you are to her, the more she's going to do back to you, and you will not even recognize yourself in the relationship. If you just forget about yourself for a few minutes and genuinely do chasadim for your wife, you'll see how much she will give you in return. Because again, she is not brought up that somebody serves on her hand and foot, usually. So she will be very, very appreciative. And her appreciation will express itself in many acts of love and kindness towards you, and you will live happily ever after. So that's the marriage tip for the day, free of charge. Great! Let's go on to the next point. Oh, but what about after you find the bucket on the floor? What? Because she kicked it. What happens after a woman dies? What happens after the woman dies? What are you going to get from her now?
Nothing.
You can't get anything from her. So therefore, why don't we just bury her? We'll bury her, and then you know what we'll do? We'll find ourselves someone else to wait on his hand. So that's what it's called, Chesed Shel Emes. By the way, Eliezer said to Lavan and Basul in this week's Parsha, I want you to do with me, did I tell you this gematria? Chesed Ve'emes. I want you to give me Rivka to marry Yitzchak, and that will be an act of kindness and an act of truth. If you do the gematria, comes out, punkt, b'diyuk, gematria chosen v'kala. Chesed Ve'emes, chosen and kala. Bride and groom, and that's what they were getting. So that's what a marriage is based on. Chesed and Emes. So that's a good gematria for the day. I think if I'm not mistaken, it's 512. You can figure it out. But after she's dead, so then there's nothing else to do. So Elisha says that that's called a Chesed Shel Emes. Why is it a Chesed Shel Emes? A true Chesed? Because what are you getting
you're
in return?
Nothing.
You're not doing it for any reward. You're doing it purely out of the kindness of your heart. And that's it. And that's why the Torah is telling us. Abram... You did the gematria, Ariel? Abraham was not, they call it in, I'm not even sure which language, I think it's in Yiddish, an interessante. That he's worrying about his own interests, and that's why he did kindness for people. And you should know, in this world, that's the way the world works. The people who are kindest to the others always get the most back. You do somebody, I've noticed in life, the people who I've thought least about myself with, and I've devoted and I've sacrificed most of myself for, I've received the most in return from. And the people who I had a guarded relationship, that I was thinking more about myself and less about them, or equally, then I receive less from them. The more you think about yourself, the less in the end you're going to see from other people. When you really, in any relationship... Chasan Kala, thank you. When you really, really... So that's Chasan Kala and Chasan Venice. So if you really, really focus on the other person, you're going to get a lot back in return, and they're going to appreciate it, and they're going to remember it for many years to come, because they know you genuinely cared about them. So therefore you would think that's what Avram was doing, Gevaldik, because he knows the secret. He knows that he saw it, that you do a chesed for somebody, and then in the end, oh, you know, now you need him as a business contact. You know, people What are shuls today? People, in the olden days, shuls were for davening and learning. Today, there's a new word. It's a new word for me because I'm a little bit of an old-fashioned guy. Networking. Shul is for networking. That means you go to shul and you see all the rich people sitting in shul, and then you try to find jobs. I need a summer job. You'll see. You'll already also hopefully not use shul for networking. Only after shul, during the kiddush maybe. But some people use it during shul also, unfortunately. But after shul, oh, this guy will get me a summer job, and this guy can hire me, and maybe this guy can help my brother out, and my father is looking to invest in something. Maybe he wants to be my father's partner. And people are always networking in shul and trying to figure out who can help them in some way. So if you once did a tremendous favor for somebody, they'll say, ah, you used to babysit my kid for free. You used to tutor my kid for 3 years. You helped my kid study Gemara, and you got him through high school. And now all you want is a summer job. Boom! You have a summer job, $2,500 a month. Pretty good. You get it on your resume. Why? Because you tutored his son for free. So that's all Olam Hazeh. When you're doing chesed with a dead person, that's chesed shel emes. That's why I have a joke. I always say I never like to go to funerals. People ask, why? I say, why should I go to their funeral? They're not coming to mine. Right? So what's the answer? The answer is the chesed shel emes. You go, you cry, you do mitzvahs for them. They're not doing anything in return. By the way, now that we're on the mitzvah thing, I have somebody I was close to who unfortunately never married, and his name is Aaron ben Yaakov Shachman. This Aaron ben Yaakov Shachman died without any wife, without any children, without any descendants. Just sadly died alone at a ripe old age. So you want to do a chesed shel emes? You go for Aaron ben Yaakov Shachna, and you do a mitzvah. You give a shekel to tzedakah, you say a perek tehillim, and you're doing it l'ilui nishmaso. Aaron ben Yaakov Shachna in this world is not going to thank you. He's not going to do anything for you. In the next world, maybe he'll do something for you, but not in this world. Anyway, you won't see it directly. To tell you a good story of what happens in the next world, I told you guys this story. It's a true story. But forgive me, sometimes I go a little off the topic, but it's all related. My father-in-law, unfortunately, last year decided to switch yeshivas. He used to learn in a yeshiva here in Har Nof, in the shul over there. And then he switched to another yeshiva called Yeshiva Shel Mala. Ever heard of that yeshiva? Has a lot of good students in that yeshiva. Moshe Rabbeinu's in that yeshiva. Rabbi Akiva's in that yeshiva. Hillel, Shammai, Rabbi Akiva Eger, the Rambam, the Rashba, the Ritva, the Raiva, the Rashash. They're all in that yeshiva. You know what yeshiva I'm referring to now, Yeshiva Shel Mala. So he went to that yeshiva. That was the last era of Rosh Hashanah. So how long was my wife's shiva? Anyone know Hilchos Aveilus?
Zero.
It was about 4 hours. 4 hours. And then Rosh Hashanah came, and that was the end of the Shiva. So, because Baruch Hu didn't want my wife to mourn, so I think it was a good thing. Anyway, but my father was a very special man. In 1977, Tavshin Lamed Ches, the Lubavitcher Rebbe was in the middle of giving a Shurasha. He was in the middle of giving a Farbrengen. Farbrengen means there's thousands of Hasidim sitting there. The Rebbe speaks for 6, 7, 8 hours. And the Hasidim hang on every word he says. And we have it all written. You know how many books have been published based on the Lubavitcher Rebbe's Sichos?
950.
Hundreds and hundreds. Sichos and letters. Hundreds and hundreds. They recorded every word he said. If you want to watch, you can go to either Bonkers Bagels, of course, from Bonkers, or you can go to the Chabad place over there, right down where I live, right next to Rehov Chabad. And you can see videos of the Rebbe speaking, and they taped him already before people were taping. The Lubavitchers were taping him. He would go on for hours and hours, and he would speak. I've never seen anybody who could say like him. Lamdis, like Gemara Biyun, and Halacha, and Chumash. He would explain. He'd go through the Chumash and explain deep shot in the Chumash, and he'd give people Musar, and he would talk a lot about Kabbalah. And he would give, advice for life. And, he would encourage them and spur them on. You have to do more kiruv and you have to sacrifice for Hashem, etc. Everything. And he's science fit. Everything for hours and hours and hours. And the Hasidim would hang on every word. And even people who went there didn't understand Yiddish, they would also be like, the Rebbe is speaking. It was something amazing. In the middle of the Farbrengen, the Rebbe puts his head down on the table. Now, I'm used to that. That when I'm speaking, other people put their head down on the table. Right? Because people say tachman. For whatever reason, whenever I start talking, people start feeling like they have to say tachman. I don't know what it is. I do it at night. At night, you don't say tachman. I never understood that. Anyway, so the rabbi gets down. He puts his head down. And the chassidim wait. So what do we do in high school? Many high schools, they have the five-minute rule, right? This teacher doesn't get there for 5 minutes. We go out of class. The teacher puts his head down on the table. The students are looking at their watch. You're taking up my time.
Arois! And then they leave. But obviously the Hasidim have a great deal of respect for the Rebbe. Not that we didn't have respect in high school, but not in all high schools do we have proper respect. They waited, they waited, they waited. After about 20 minutes, the Rebbe picked up his head and he continued speaking. Afterwards, called in some doctors, and the doctors determined that he had had a massive heart attack. And the doctor said that it was simply superhuman. They've never seen anything like it, that after such a painful heart attack, he can continue speaking and giving the drasha. He just put his head down. An old man! We're talking about a guy who's in his mid-70s. Oh, his mid-70s isn't old, right? It's only old when that's the age of your grandparents. When that's the age of your parents, it's not old anymore. So you always have to figure out what's old. When I was a kid, that was ancient. Now it's not old anymore. But he was in his mid-70s. He has this heart attack. He continues talking. He finishes what he has to say, and then the doctors treat him. So he said that there's a doctor in Cleveland, Ohio. He wants this doctor. You have to get the best doctors. It was right in the middle of Yom Tov. Who's the doctor from Cleveland, Ohio? My father-in-law. Not at the time. Because even though my wife was only a year older than Rivka at the time, so I could have married her, but since I was only 6, I did not yet want to get married. You get the joke? Right? In other words, my future father-in-law. You got the joke. Great. So the... Is it 6 or 7? No, 7. No, 6. So the... It was right before my birthday, I think. So the... Not that I could combine the two. I wasn't really into Lubavitch then at that age. So he flies in on Yom Tov. He didn't know how to get... Yeah, he didn't know how to get money. He was at the time, he was a Lubavitcher chassid. So on Yom Tov, he's running around to look for some money. He gets in a cab. He goes to the airport and he flies to New York. He flies from Cleveland to New York. And who's his cab driver when he gets out of the airplane?
You.
An Israeli. So the Israeli said, "What are you doing?" He sees a guy with a black hat and a beard, and he's riding in a car in Yom Tov. So my father says, "What are you doing? You're a Jewish guy. What are you doing?" So the joke I always make is that my father-in-law said to him, "I promise not to tell if you promise not to tell." But that's not what he said. Anyway, it's Pikuach Nefesh. So he takes it to 770 to Lubavitch headquarters, and my father-in-law examines the Rebbe, and he felt very guilty. It's Yom Tov. And he was flying. Tell me something. There are no doctors in New York? In the New York area, there are no doctors. You have to fly in from Cleveland? So the Rebbe said to him, "Don't feel bad. Don't feel badly. I thought you were the best doctor. I wanted you, so therefore I called you, and it's pikuach nefesh, you should have no guilt complex." Great. So he treats him, goes back home after Yom Tov, and then he gets a check in the mail. This is just to tell you the end of the story. He gets a check in the mail from the Rebbe, signed by the Rebbe. I even saw, if I remember correctly, he used to say he has a long correspondence with the Rebbe, so he used to save them, and then he put them all in a folder, and he photocopied the check. So I saw a copy of the check with his, because I saw this correspondence, with the Rebbe's signature, Menachem Mendel Schneerson, and this amount of money for Dr. Henry Rambam. That was his name. I don't remember how much it was a nice amount. So, my father-in-law felt bad, he's going to take money from it was an honor to serve Lubavitcher Rebbe, you don't have to take money. So he took the money, and he donated it to the Chabad house in Cleveland. He figured, the Rebbe's giving me money, so I'll give it back to where I got it. No, the Rebbe heard about that, and he sent him another check, and he says, "No, I want you to use it for yourself." And that was the end of that story. No, what happened? This year, last Erev Rosh Hashanah, he died. And a few weeks before Rosh Hashanah this year, I have a Hasidish Rebbe, I go to name the Tolna Rebbe. So the Tolna Rebbe knew my father-in-law. He spoke to him a number of times. The Rebbe visited him in the hospital. So when he was ill. So the Rebbe told my wife, who's her father, that he had a dream. In the dream, sometimes the Rebbe sees dead people. Dead people come to him in a dream. He has a lot of, when you're very spiritual, when you dream of spiritual things. A lot of people, they dream, let's say, about girls, about their taivas, about money, about going to an amusement park. But the Rebbe, if you're a holy Rebbe, you have dreams. Yaakov, he sees angels going up and going down. That's the dreams. That's why it's such a big inyan to sleep on Shabbos. Not because you're just, because you're dead, and sleep is 1/60th of death, but because since Shabbos is such a high holy day, and when you dream, since you're on higher levels of consciousness, because your brain isn't so involved, and you're able to transcend this worldly matters, and you're really dreaming from your soul. I once had a very mystical experience about that, which I won't get into now. But you're dreaming from your soul, okay? So, therefore, you can see things that you normally can't see when you're awake.
That's why it's good to sleep during shiva.
That's why... So, what happened? What did he see in the dream? He saw my father-in-law, and first of all, he looked very good. It says in the Gemara that when a person goes to Gehenna, their face looks like the bottom of a pot on the fire. What is the bottom of the pot on the fire? What color is it? First of all, it's black. That's not good. And what else? Exactly. There's a fire there. So the Gemara says that when somebody's in Gehenna, their face looks like the bottom of the pot. And that doesn't look good at all. But he said he looked very good. And he had a big black beard when the Rebbe knew him, and I knew him, he had a gray beard. But this, he saw him as a young man because now he's in the Olam Amos. And
no, I was in Gehenna.
No, he wasn't in Gehenna. I'm saying the Gemara says that when someone is in Gehenna, their face looks like the bottom of a pot, which means
that
it's black and there's fire. But if somebody's face looks good, and that's really where this whole idea of face, that shows the pneumius of a person, and that shows where what their spiritual level is. Hashem bu'or panechi aleichum. God, we say about the Tekiah Shofar, we go in the light of your face. A person's light face shows that he's on a high spiritual level. It says that a person's face on Shabbos is not like his face during the week. Certain tzaddikim, their face totally changed on Shabbos because they're on a higher spiritual level. So a face is a reflection of your spirituality. Yes, Josh?
Isn't there
finish the story. So Lubavitcher Rebbe is standing next to my father-in-law in the dream. So first, my father-in-law looks at the Talmud Rebbe, my Rebbe, my living Rebbe, who's having this dream, and he identifies himself. You know, he says, I'm so-and-so, I'm Nechi Yerman, that's my wife. Nechi Yerman's father. So Rebbe says, And then he looks at Lubavitcher Rebbe, who's standing near my father, and Lubavitcher Rebbe looks at my father, and he says to the Talmud Rebbe, he says, he took care of me, I'm going to take care of him. That's it. That was his message from Shemayim. That he looked good, which is a good sign. And then Lubavitcher Rebbe said, he took care of me, referring to this event, I'm assuming, in 1977, Tavshin Lamaches, and therefore, I'm going to take care of him. So that's why it's always good to do chasadim with people, because you never know when they're going to take care of you. And indeed, I like to tell the guys all the time, it says in Derech Hashem, that if a person isn't zoche to go to Olam Haba, if he's close to a Rav, the Rav gets him into Olam Haba. That's it. All you have to do is be good friends with a tzaddik, and you get into Olam Haba. That's why I tell guys, get close to your Rabbeim, because forget it. In this world, they'll help you a great deal, because I believe that the Rabbeim generally, besides your family, are the only people who really care about you genuinely. And, besides a few friends, but I'm saying older people, people around you, not close friends. And B, and a lot of times the Rebbe cares more about a friend, because a lot of friendship is not always based on the purest motivations. And B, if you're already zochah to go to Olam Haba, the Rebbe can bring you to much higher levels. So it's always good to get close to your Rebbe. So, that is chasadim. So a lot of times in you chasadim, you're going to get it back. You just don't know when. That's why, also you learn someone safer. It says in a number of places, when you learn someone safer, when you, after 120, they come to greet you, and they have a lot of gratitude towards you, because you learn their Torah, and you gave their neshama an aliyah. Like now, we're learning the Nesiv HaShalom. The Nesiv HaShalom is having, his neshama is getting more and more reward, because we're learning his safer. So I have no hesitations to believe that when we go upstairs, one of the people there to greet us after 120 years will be the Nesiv HaShalom, with a big yashar koach, and he'll do what he can to help us. So how does that all relate to Avraham Avinu? Avraham Avinu here, a lot of times in life, we started, you do chasadim for somebody, and you know you're going to get something in return. And we said before, the more devoted you are to them, the more you're going to receive in return. Avraham Avinu is doing a chesed here for Sarah. So this is a chesed shalemis. You're going to say to me, ultimately, Shemayim, Sarah will also. It's true, but it's a lot less direct. The person's dead, they're in the ground, you don't know what's happening exactly in Shemayim. You're doing a chesed shalemis. The Torah basically told us here, it's not only a lesson to go to funerals and to care about people who are dead and to learn Leilu Nishmasim, etc., but also to do chesed mishalemes even when the person's still alive. You do a chesed with a retarded child. So what can he do for you in return? What is he going to do? He's going to set you up with his pretty sister. Saying, you do chesed. Or maybe he'll give you a hug. Maybe he's not able to hug. Maybe a lot of people, they work with retarded people, and the retarded people, they scream at them, and they spit at them, and they curse at them. You work with people with Alzheimer's, right? Such people, there's no gratitude involved, but you're doing a chesed shalemes. You don't want anything in return. And that's the highest level of chesed. So the reason the Torah went through this whole story is to tell us how much effort and how much money Avraham Avinu was willing to spend in order to do this act of kindness. Yes,
what
that's
are doing chesed, like, yeah.
So that is one reason. So first, do chesedim shalemes. And then he says, v'yesh lomar od. You see, v'yesh lomar od, we're in the right column, on page Kuf Lamed Daled, the second paragraph of this piece. D'hinei, kasher medaykin b'loshan ha-kasuv. when we are medayek, when we are very exact in the words of this pasuk, of the psukim, nimsa shinui ben divrei Avram ledivrei b'nei Ches, we'll find a difference between the words of Avram and the words of the b'nei Ches, those sons of Ches, those people with whom Avram was negotiating. Sha'avram mevakish mehem kol hazman b'nasha b'lashon tnuli achuzas kever. Avram said, give me achuzas kever. And then you know what the b'nei Ches keep answering him? Kever. So it's like a funny sort of conversation. Avram Avinu says, give me an achuzas kever. And they say, yeah, we'll give you a kever. And he says, you know, I really want that achuzas kever. And they say, yeah, we'll give you the kever. And he said, I'm willing to pay 400 gold coins, silver coins for that achuzas kever. And they say, okay, it's a deal. That for the kever, that's what you'll pay us. So why do they use different words? I'm so glad you asked, Alicia. An achuza is like a plat that somebody gives as an inheritance to his children, that goes to his children, that goes on until the end of generations. As a matter of fact, we'll see now. B'mifchak v'reinu kvores meisecha. Ish mimenu es kivro lo yichla mimcha. They keep saying kever. The best of our kevers, you should bury your dead. The best of our graves. Nobody, his grave will hold back from you. Why? Because for them, a grave, kietzlam, inya kvura, kufiyat fisa shel goy. How does a goy look at a grave? Where else are you going to put him? You're going to put him in a freezer? Okay, that's where goyim, some of them put their dead people today. But until they came up with that idea, where else are you going to put the dead person? You're going to put him in the living room? Right, you could also burn them. People, not everyone thinks it's such an honor to the dead. But the ground is just a place to keep them. Just the most convenient place. So you stick them in the ground. It's just a place to bury the dead until it becomes nothing. Right, until it disintegrates. He says it's an achuzas kever. The way Avram Avinu relates to kvura is ke'inyan mekudash biyoser. It's something that's very holy. So I was looking up to see what is special. Why does achuzas kever make it something special? Why does the word achuza make it special? So I looked it up in the Das Mikra. The Das Mikra is like, he gives you the simple explanation. It's all in Hebrew, but he gives you the simple explanation of the words. So here it works out very well with the Nesiv HaShalom saying. He says, this is something that you take and you give as an inheritance for many generations. That's how the Das Mikra defines achuzas kever, a plot of a grave. Not just a grave, but a plot of a grave and something that you're going to keep for the generations, meaning that it's something very, very important.
We just went there
2 months. That. Where? Right. I've been saying this is the Shabbos. There are going to be tens of thousands of Jews in Chevron the Shabbos because of that achuzas kever. And you see the Arabs go, the goyim always know what our sensitive points are. Right? They take our holiest places. And then they say that's ours, right? That's what they like. They like Har Abayis, they like here the Temple Mount, and they like Moritz HaMachpelah. They know, Rav Soloveitchik said, when the Goyim start up with the Jews, when they oppress the Jews about a certain issue or a certain place they claim is their own, we should know that issue, that mitzvah which they're not allowing us to perform, or that area, that plot of land that they want, is something very holy. Because the Goyim have this sixth sense to know what's special to the Jews, and that's what they grab onto. And that's why in the Holocaust, The Nazis' greatest pleasure was seeing a Jew trample on the Sefer Torah. Remember I told you the story about the high school kids that I told you guys? The high school kids at the end of the year, I told a few other guys. It's a true story. Last year, religious high school kids, they had an end of the year party. End of the year, you know, they're happy they're finishing school. So they all went to the beach, boys and girls together, you know, Orthodox, you know, modern Orthodox kids. And they brought their textbooks along. Why? What are you going to do with your textbooks at the end of the year? Burn them. That's what they did. They burned their textbooks, and one of their textbooks was their Gemaras, because they also learned Gemara. So they threw their Gemara in the fire. And afterwards, one of their you know, older friends went ballistic. He said, that's what the Goyim do. And they had these book-burning things. It was terrible. So many horrible stories about that. So the kid said, listen, we didn't think of any of it. We have math class, we have science, we have Gemara, we have history, we have English. We just threw all our books in there. What's the big deal? So that's why in our high schools, some high schools more than others, but they don't stress enough that Gemara is something that we're willing to die for. Gemara is our life. Gemara is Kiyum Chayinu Baruch Hameinu. Gemara Jews are sent to Siberia, are willing to be sent to Siberia in order to learn. And math, if somebody would tell me that if I never learn math again, if I ever learn math again, he's going to kill me, I would say, Baruch Atah, Baruch Shemcha, blessed are you and blessed is your name. I give him $50 for the good favor, for the good tip, and I never learn math again. It wouldn't bother me. But if somebody tells me you're never allowed to learn Gemara again, take a bullet to the head. What's the question? I'm not allowed to learn Torah. It's your life. So therefore these kids didn't realize that. So, what does that have to do with a Torah? So the Goyim knew how much the Jews loved their Torah during the Holocaust. So instead, the way they knew they could most demoralize them was that they'll still have them trample on Sifrei Torah. They burn them with the Sefer Torah. Never heard that story of the guy in Detroit? Never heard the story with the guy in Detroit? I think it was Detroit. No, yeah. I have no idea who Clarence is, but I know that he has a twin brother in the yeshiva named Yosef. Great. So there's a story in Detroit. There was once a fellow who did a... It's a longer story, but to make it short, an old, simple Jew did a hachnas Sefer Torah. And he didn't really have very much money. And they didn't understand how he could afford it. So the Rav went up to him afterwards. It's in one of the Maggid books. You can look up all the details there. I don't remember all the details. They asked him why he's giving a Torah. You know, he doesn't have very much money. He's not such a big Talmud Chacham. Like, why does he care to give an entire Sefer Torah? He said that when he was in the camps, the Goyim made him trample on the Sefer Torah. It was either they made him use the cloth of the Sefer Torah as shoes, or they just made him trample on it. And that was the only way he was going to save his life. He knew the only way he was going to remain alive is if he steps in the Sefer Torah. But at that time, he swore to himself that when he gets out of these, if he gets out of the camps alive, one day he's going to buy a Sefer Torah and give cover to the Sefer Torah. So for many years, he saved up money, little by little, you know, a simple worker, didn't have very much, a Sefer Torah was very expensive, he saved up, and eventually he was able, in his old age, he had the schus to give the Sefer Torah. But the Goyim know where to start up with us, they know to start up with the Sefer Torah. So that's why the Goyim like Maris HaMachpelah so much, because they know for us, it's not just a place to put a dead person, because there's nowhere else that's convenient. You know, you don't want to put them in the living room sofa. You know, the company comes in and says, an interesting odor in this house. You know, they say that corpses don't smell so delicious. Right? You, well, where are you going to put them? You're going to put them in the, in the closet? Where are you going to put them? So you bury them in the ground. No! For us, it's Achuzas Kever. It's a place, it's an important plot of land that's given as an inheritance generation to generation. And you see how many generations Jews have been going to Maris HaMachpelah. And they started a yeshiva. They started a yeshiva, and they went from Slobodka from Russia, the top yeshiva, one of the top yeshivas in all of Eastern Europe. And where did they move to? To Hebron. And they started a yeshiva. Ever to the Hebron yeshiva? There's still a yeshiva today. You know what? They're in Jerusalem. They're two shluchot. You know how to say that in English? Two branches. One branch is in Geula, there's Chevron Geula, and there's Chevron Givat Mordechai. How did Chevron get to Geula and Givat Mordechai? Chevron's in Chevron. It's not in Geula, or Givat Mordechai is nearby Vegan. So the answer is, in 1929, the Arabs went berserk, and they chopped up something like 69 Jews, and then afterwards they moved to Yeshiva, the famous Chevron massacre of 1929. So that's why the yeshiva afterwards they moved away from Hebron. But the Arabs grab onto Hebron. Hebron's chibur. Hebron is the place. Maris HaMachpelah is the place. It says in Kabbalah that's where Gan Eden and Gehenna, that's where this world and the next world meet. Right? That's the Pesach. You go through that Pesach, that opening of Maris HaMachpelah to get to the Olam HaEmes. You've heard that?
It's like a curtain in Maris HaMachpelah. It says like.
It says Zohar. Yeah. Beautiful. So that's a very, very holy place. Avraham Avinu was the leader of all of the believers. Shavodasa were in the fourth line of the left column on page Kuflam Adalin. Shavodasa, I saw the Hafetz Emun Abolim. His work was to spread Emun on the world, to spread faith in God. Ubechlal Zes Emun Abitchias HaMesim, included in this faith, is faith in Tchias HaMesim and the resuscitation of the dead. That when a person dies, it's not forever, it's only temporary. And this was his intention. When he spoke to B'nai Ches, he wanted to show them, we believe in Tchias HaMesim. We know that dead are going to be alive again. That's why I'm paying a lot of attention to where I bury her. Otherwise it wouldn't mean anything to me. But since I know that this is very important, this is part of the Tchias HaMesim process, that they be buried. That's why it's so important to be buried in the ground. Because part of the Tchias HaMesim process is that they come from the ground. What?
Huh? like roll underground.
Right, it says the person is buried in Chutz La'aretz, they do Gilgal Mechilos. They have to roll to Eretz Yisrael. Like, I guess I always imagine it like a bowling ball. You know, when it comes back after, you know, you hit down the pins and, you know, it comes back around under. That's the way I always imagine it. Great, but not that it's like that literally, but that's just my own childish interpretation. And therefore he spoke about an achuzas kever, a plot of a burial place, something important to me. Because the soul of a Jew is eternal, and we have to hide it, we have to bury it in a special and holy place until his neshama comes back at Tchias HaMeisim. And that's why a person wants to be buried in Har Zeisim. Of course, $10,000-$15,000 for, you know, four amas by four amas. What's that all about? Because where a person's buried, very important. There was a story in the Holocaust. There was a rabbi. And the Nazis demanded that everybody, a rabbi in Warsaw, the rabbi said all the Jews have to get on the train, and they were going to take them to be gassed. So he knew that if he's gassed, then he's not going to have a Jewish burial. So he refused to get on the train, and they shot him on the spot. And the poskim discussed what the heter was, because he could have lived for a few more minutes, and we do anything we can to live for a few more minutes. So in fact, there is a heter. One of the teirim is that a person doesn't have to suffer greatly in order to live a few more minutes. So in that case, what he did was mutter. Why? Because if he knew that he was going to be killed and not be buried, the last few minutes of his life would have been tremendous suffering because it was so important to him. So in order to prevent suffering, one is allowed to passively allow oneself to be killed.
So why didn't he tell the information to everyone else?
Why didn't he? What should he tell them? Not to get on in order to... Maybe it wouldn't have bothered them as much. Maybe for them it wouldn't have been Yisurim. The other side is, what they did was also right. They wanted to stay alive for a few more minutes. In those few minutes, you can daven, you can say animamin, you can do vidui. There's a lot you can do in a few minutes. So what they did was right, and what he did was right. But the question is about him, because we always try to lengthen our life as much as possible. But you see the importance, and he was buried. He came to Kever Yisrael, and they gave him a proper burial, because a proper burial is very important, because we believe in Tchias HaMeisim, and incidentally, that's why he's so insistent on paying top dollar. So one of the Mekubalim, I once heard a shiur from a great Mekubal here in Yerushalayim, he said that in order to merit Tchias HaMeisim, we need to merit Bedin. What does it mean, Bedin? It means strict judgment. It means no favors. We have to. It used to be a commercial for a certain investment fund. At Smith Barney, it's like the 1980s. At Smith Barney, we get money the old-fashioned way. We earn it. That's what he used to say, an English guy. We earn it. So you have to earn your Tchias HaMeisim. It's not what you put water in and then it makes the hot water hot. Earn in the sense that you have to earn it, you have to work for it. So since Tchias HaMeisim has to be earned, our Rabbeinu said, I'm going to pay a lot of money in order to show that Bedin, in strict judgment, this plot of land really belongs to me. Just like Tchias HaMeisim has to really belong to you, you have to earn it. So we learned three things today. Besides, we learned a lot, Baruch Hashem. But basically, from the Nesiv Shalom, we got A, to teach you Shdua Chesed Shal Emes, even with the dead, which applies even Bizman Hazeh, because even when you're alive, to living people, just do a Chesed, not thinking you're going to get anything in return. That's the closest you'll get to a Chesed Shal Emes with a living person. B, we learned that he spoke about it with them in order to show them that we believe in Tchias HaMeisim and to show them that it's not just a place to put a dead body, it's a plot of land and it's something that's holy for the generations. And C, we learned that you have to earn your Tchias HaMeisim, and therefore he made sure to earn this plot of land. He made sure to pay much more money than it could possibly anybody could ever demand for it to show that it's truly his, and so to Tchias HaMeisim has to be truly ours. And believe me, guys, when all of those dead come up from that grave, boy, are they going to be happy, and boy, are we going to be happy to see them. 2, 3, 4. I Wait, Shabbos is coming. Yes, Mechon.